Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball. And
they're off. Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
Well, you're very welcome along to Friday Night Racing here on Off the Ball. The Sport of Kings were back with action at the Curra and Navan this weekend. Also, a huge meeting at Newmarket tomorrow. Our special this week guest is Chris Hayes. He'll be joining us very shortly on the line, but I'm joined in studio by the guru, that is Tom Malone, the flat guru. Tom, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad, John. Really looking forward to it. Obviously, Cambridgeshire in the UK. We've got a couple of Group 1s over there. Really looking forward to the Curra as well. Got the Beresford Stakes on Sunday. A race Aidan O'Brien has farmed over the last couple of decades. So, generally points us in the light of a potential three-year-old star for next year. Had the likes of St. Nicholas Abbey and See the Stars win it in the past. Obviously, Japan won it last year, and he looked what he's going to the arc with a single-figure price. So, yeah, really looking forward to it.
It's all about Japan at the moment, isn't it, Tom? The flat season, can you sum it up how it's been the last few months? Has it been a good year? Like, you know the way they say the harvest is good. Has the harvest been good for flat racing?
I think it's probably been slightly above average. Aidan O'Brien probably thinks he's had a slightly disappointing year, maybe compared to where he did at the start. I mean, I say that, but like, he won the 1,000 guineas, the 2,000 guineas and the Derby and the Irish Derby. So, you know, probably wasn't that bad. It's just that maybe in those sort of, when you come to the middle of the summer, the likes of those, you know, clashes of the generations, his three-year-olds haven't really held their own form. Yes, Magical has done well, but she's chased home and Able a lot. And I think a lot of the flat season will actually depend on what happens at the Arc. So we could have the Coronation of the Queen in Able if she makes history and wins a third arc. Batash goes for the Prix de l'Abbé. He's around about an even money shot for that. He looks to be a superstar sprinter. He's finally kind of shed that tag that he was unpredictable. So look, really looking forward to those two. And, you know, then there is a chance that Able could head to the Breeders' Cup as well. From an Irish point of view, I mean, there's been lots of sort of breakthrough stories over the course of the year, but I think really the story of the flat season kind of was last weekend, and Pat Smullen and the way racing pulled together in their...
Were you there?
Yes, I was there, yeah. It was a spectacular day of sport, I'll be honest with you. I've never...
Shiver down the spine, so if I'd say it was.
It really was. It really, really was. Tony McCoy winning, Des Scal back in the commentary box, you know, Chris Hayes we have on, him wearing the Moyglare colours that Pat Smullen is so synonymous with, winning the RSA Ledger in Search for a Song. I mean, just that, and I suppose as well for the Curra itself, it was a huge day. I mean, they've been, you know, they've been bashed in some quarters for the execution.
Unfairly so?
I think unfairly so. People will say I'm biased because, you know, obviously I'm there quite a lot. I am seeing...
It takes time for things to settle in.
Absolutely. It really does. And the thing is about any major project, it can only work by working. So it's like a snag list on a new house. As soon as you go in and you find the way it feels, then you work meeting by meeting by meeting. And because they couldn't have those sort of meetings earlier on in the year because they're slightly behind, you know, just push things... It made things far more difficult for them. You know, Pat Keogh's come in from Leopardstown. It's made a visible difference. But again, I would say that, you know, the work that Derek and all the team did kind of laid a lot of the foundation for Pat as well. So, look, it was absolutely brilliant to see last Sunday because... you know, so many people, including Pat Smullen, said, oh, the Curra's back. And you felt like you had a vibe, but a lot of it came from the action they saw. I mean, the outpouring of personal goodwill.
What was the kind of roar like when they got into the final furlong of that flat, that special race?
It was, as regards a flat meeting that I've been in the past, it was similar to when we had Roaring Lion and Saxon Warrior go head-to-head in the Irish Champion Stakes the previous year. I mean, for me, in the last 4 or 5 years of flat racing in Ireland, until Sunday and AP McCoy in Quizzical, that was like one of the like most thrilling finishes we've had in recent times.
Do you think we should have jumps at a flat course to attract more punters, say at the Curra? Do you think there should be hurdle races? Do you think there should be a mixed card?
I don't. I mean, the layout of the track doesn't really allow for it in the first place, and I can't really see how you can attract top class international talent to the venue if you're going to go and say, oh, we're going to run it. Like, what hurdle are you going to run? You're going to end up with a really ordinary hurdle. So you're going to say, no, we want to get these multi-million dollar horses that are going to become world class stallions in time, and say, oh no, before that we're going to run a, I don't know, 0-109 handicap hurdle. Like, it doesn't really stack up to keeping everyone happy. Obviously, flat racing is less popular than jumps racing. I mean, that's just a given. I mean, there are ways I think we can just make the sport more accessible. Look, my son goes racing with me quite regularly, and one of the things for him is that he can get in touch with the jockeys, literally. Like, you know, he stands by the parade ring, he gets high fives and Dunnock O'Brien from Colin Keane, from Chris Hayes, and he absolutely loves it. You know, Oisin Nua gave him his goggles the other day, and it's just these little things, they absolutely made his day. And like, from an accessibility point, you know, kids can go to the races and they can just, you know, meet the stars there and then, get up close and personal.
Who's going to win the flat title?
I think Dunnock probably just has the edge in ammunition. But like Colin Keane, what a rider. Colin Keane's already been champion jockey and he will be champion jockey again. So for that reason, I think there's nothing wrong with Dunnock, you know, taking it, and it might be one of the last times we see Dunnock O'Brien riding regularly on the flat, because, I mean, just the size of the lad. You know, he's been on the show before, talked about the struggles with his weight. You know, he has, I'm not sure he's actually taken out his trainer's license yet, but it's certainly in the pipeline. So as if it's not fearsome enough with Joseph there, he's there too.
Okay, so we are joined on the line by jockey Chris Hayes. Chris, good afternoon, or good evening.
Hey, Dad.
Hi, Chris.
You're coming off the back of a win in the St. Ledger, Chris, with Search for a Song a fortnight ago. It was your second victory in the race 6 years after your first. Talk to us about it.
Yeah, well, I suppose if you could see by the video, it all went according to plan, didn't it? no, look, it was magic, really, the way it ended up. But throughout the race, there was, in the early part of the race, they were going no kind of pace, and we intended to get her settled, only the fifth run of her life against our stairs, and she got a little bit lit up and keen in my hands when they steadied the pace after a furlong, and I was getting into a bit of a tug of war, and I kind of just eased my way out to try and get her to drop the bridle and maybe make up a length, and possibly she'd relax and get into a rhythm, but the pace wasn't quickening when I done that, so I had no option but to keep going forward and try and keep a sensible rhythm, you know, without doing anything too quickly on her, and thankfully I got a good sit again at the top of the hill when she got to the front, and it was plain sailing up the straight. She was never stopping and ran right down to the white board, so it was nice that it worked out.
Hi Chris, Tom here. The early stages of the race, you just said there you didn't want to get in a tug of war. Maybe just explain to listeners how bad or how detrimental that can be to a horse's chances in a race.
Ordinarily what happened would, like, it just goes to show how good she actually is, because ordinarily when you see a jockey kind of fighting for that long to try and get them to relax and get into a rhythm and get them to do things right, if you saw the replay, like, she's shaking her head. She's a lot heavier and stronger than I am, so I was at nothing really trying to fight her and restrict her. So I actually got into that kind of situation with her in the Oaks and probably didn't have the confidence in myself to go and just let her use that big stride of hers. It wasn't the plan either in the Ledger. I had only actually intended to ease her out, to let her make up a length or two, and hopefully that was going to get her to get into a rhythm. But as I said, the pace didn't quicken, so I was kind of forced to just keep the momentum that I had start building to get me to the front and then allow me to get a sit before the race to quicken, you know.
Does Chris, in the final furlong, you know, does it make a difference that it's the St. Ledger? Do you feel that, okay, this is a classic, this is a bigger race, or does it just feel like an ordinary race?
No, the classics and the Group 1, they feel different. They're an awful lot sweeter. Like, to be honest with you, in the early part of that race, I was, it was disaster. There was a lot of thoughts going through my head. When I eased her out, like, that's the point of no return. When you make that kind of a call and you ease them out, it could have worked with plan A, that she might have only have made up a length or two and I'd have got a nice little stitch and everything would have been fine. It went completely wrong when I eased her out and the pace didn't quicken. I was stuck in no man's land. You're not going to stay four wide in a classic. I kind of had to keep the momentum going on her, and there was a lot of prayers being said as I was climbing my way to the front, and there was a lot of prayers being said at the top of the hill, hoping that she'd be able to keep going. And there's a sense of relief and satisfaction, and you know, there's a lot of elation for the weekend that it was as well, and the fact that it was for Meigler and Mr. Wells and Pat being there. You know, there was a lot of emotions as well, but definitely the bigger races would mean more to you.
It kind of keeps you grounded, I suppose, Chris, doesn't it? That, you know, you dedicated your win to Pat, you donated your riding fees to cancer trials, and okay, there have been disappointments this year, especially at Epsom, but it does keep you grounded when you know what other people are sometimes going through.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Look, at the end of the day, like I'd be very critical on myself. I'd always look back and I'm still looking back on the Epsom Derby and more recently the Irish Oaks, you know, like see what mistakes you make, what way you could have rectified it. Like I probably cost myself the ride on Search for a Song after the Oaks when she went to go and went on and win the Galtrest, you know. But like when you get jocked off horses and things like that, there's more important things to life. And I think Pat is, and anyone that has had that terrible thing dawn on their door or darken their door rather, you know, there's bigger things in life and bigger things to be worrying about. So it was bittersweet just that Pat was there as well, you know, because he's been a good mentor and a good help to me throughout my career.
And when you said, I mean, getting back up and Search for a Song, you said you spoke to Pat. I mean, what was he kind of saying to you, you know, before the race, especially after, you know, like you said yourself, you had lost the ride after the Oaks?
Yeah, like, I rang Pat, I suppose, what, 45 minutes before. I didn't want to be annoying him throughout the day. It was a big enough weekend for him anyway. So had a quick chat with him and he asked me what I was thinking. And he just said to me, you need to trust her, get your hands down on her withers and trust her and settle her wherever that is. He said, obviously the boss will have his own plan, but he said, you do need to get her to relax and get her into a rhythm. But I think the fact that he said trust her kind of kept ringing in my ear, you know. And when I spoke to the boss then in the paddock, and he had said he wanted to get her switched off and get her into a rhythm, it was basically what Pat was saying. But I think the mistake I made in the Oaks and what I got blinded by was when they had said to me to settle her in the Oaks as well as the Ledger, your automatic thing is I need to drop her in, I need to get her head down, I need to get her relaxed. But they can settle in front, they can settle second, they can settle ninth, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, better man to do that than Pat Smullen as well. I mean, throughout his career.
Exactly, exactly. And I think I just got a little bit blindsided by it, a little bit one-track mind on what was expected and of what I was expecting myself that I should be able to do. But look, it didn't work for me in the Oaks, and after going a furlong and a half, I said, this isn't working today either. And I still stupid. It's the only regret I have in the race, that I didn't have the initiative to go and make that move earlier on, that I did spend two furlongs wasting my energy and her energy trying to get her to do something that made no sense, really, you know.
Yeah.
So the fact that we were able to get her into that rhythm and get her settled, and the fact that it all worked out, it was a relief. Like it's a great operation and great team to be riding for, but I kind of put myself under pressure, you know. There's never actually any pressure.
Do you need to stop doing that a bit, though, Chris? Like, you know, I'm hearing that, you know, you're obviously a perfectionist when it comes to this kind of thing. And maybe, you know what, just trust yourself and you go out and you'll succeed. And surely this will build a lot of confidence for you now.
Yeah, I think it will. You feel, I think, personally, and I think jockeys would say it anyway, you feed off confidence. You know, when you ride,
you're the striker, you've just scored a goal.
Yeah, exactly. When your confidence is up, you're willing to take those chances that you ordinarily mightn't if you were on 80 rides without a winner. Do you know what I mean? If you're on the back of winning, be it a maiden or a group race or a 47-65, your confidence does get up. If you make a decision and it works out, you might take chances that ordinarily you wouldn't take. And Richard Hughes probably hits it the nail on the head when he said you can't be afraid of losing. Do you know, you have to be willing to take those chances. And if you don't, and you want to sit second or sit third the whole time, three wide, and make sure you play it safe, it's not always going to work out either, you know.
Just on Pat, it took him a long time to win the Epsom Derby with Harzan in 2016 with Dermot. There were a lot of tries. You have to believe, surely, Chris, that you will get another chance at Epsom to win the biggest race in flat racing. Well, close with Mad Moon in June, on June the 1st, but you have to believe you're going to get another chance.
I'd hope so, but look, if you said to me at the start of the year I had a chance of finishing in the first three in the Epsom Derby, I'd have took your hand off it and said, yeah, thanks.
And being disappointed with finishing the first three.
Yeah, like on the day, like the emotions that hit me as soon as I crossed the line, because I can't say on air, but what I was saying when he stumbled and he started getting running with me around Tottenham Corner, there was a lot of swear words, and you know, and it's going disastrously wrong.
It must be a horrible feeling.
Yeah, you're getting there way too soon, and the gaps are presenting themselves, and you're saying, oh, if I sit now and they close, I'm going to look like an idiot. Maybe I should have just, switched in, switched out. You know, you like I said, I look back in the replay and you're saying, is there anything I could have done? Like, he didn't actually stumble until I eased him out from behind Jamie Heffernan, because at the top of the hill, I didn't think Jamie was coming down the hill that well, so I switched off his heels. I went four strides, I stumbled, and he took off. If I had stayed behind Jamie until Tottenham Corner and got around it, he wouldn't have stumbled, and I'd have been playing my cards a hell of a lot later. And the sectional timings would probably suggest that, provided I got a clear run and got the breaks that I was supposed to get or need to get, I'd have won, you know. But
yeah,
it's history now. I can't do anything about it. The fact that when I said it to Jamie a couple of days after, he just said, oh, that's probably my last go at it, or one of my last goals at it. He said, you'll have plenty of time, but Derby horses don't come around that often, you know.
I suppose another thing, you're getting better chances, I suppose, with better horses, with the association with Mr. Weld you've struck up in the last sort of year or so. How did that kind of come about?
To be honest with you, I was in Dubai for the winter, and I got injured. A horse flipped over at me just leaving the paddock, and I came home to Dr. McGoldrick to get seen to hear and get x-rays and whatever done to make sure that there was nothing being missed out on in Dubai. And at the same time, Patrick Prendergast had merged with John Ox, so that had left a day of the week free, because I had done a lot of work with Patrick Prendergast, so Wednesdays were free for me. So I was kind of saying to myself, who could I go into or who could I call? And then I was sitting on the couch on a Monday evening, and I got a phone call off Mr. Weldon. He just said that there was opportunities if I was willing to come in and write work. So obviously you jump at the chance, and I'm saying to myself, lovely, there might be an 8.5 or an 8.6 in a Premier handicap. So I didn't think, to be honest with you, my initial thought was a lightweight and handicaps Guineas or Derby weekend, because he nearly always has a nice handicap winner in those weekends. And then I automatically thought Galway.
And
lovely, I'll get a nice ride in the big handicap off a lightweight on the Tuesday. But what it's actually transpired into, it's been just phenomenal for
me. Classic,
you know?
Winner, Chris. Just on Mr. Weld and Kevin Prendergast, the governor, you know, one of the doyens of Irish racing, absolute legend, and Fozzie Stack. How quickly do you have to kind of attuned to their styles, their temperament, you know, the way they are? They're all very different people. I'm sure they've got different methods as well. Do you speak to people in the weigh room and say, look, what's this person like? You know, what are the do's and don'ts?
I've been with Kevin Prendergast since I started, so I think we know each other fairly well at this stage. I know what way he likes his horses ridden, and he kind of knows what to say to me, and we kind of just get on with it. I'm with Fozzie, we've got the 2.5 nearly 3 seasons now, and we got off to flying starts with very good first year. We won the Air Gold Cup and a lot of races last year, and this year was I'd call it a transition year in Fozzie's, because he had more younger horses than older horses. So when you hit June onwards, it's going to quieten down, but we've still had a good season. We've had a lot of success, and we had a nice listed filly winning in Ayr last Friday. So you get used to them. I think the work styles are very different, and as a rider, they improve you. When I walked into Mr. Wells' yard and got used to the horses and whatever, it took me a little while to understand. Everybody likes their horses ridden different, and I think it probably took me a little longer than I had envisaged it would, of how Mr. Wells likes him ridden. But I think I've got to grasp with it now and know what he likes, and hopefully I'm able to keep doing it.
Are those trainers you mentioned, that they don't strike me as the ones that would be that big on instruction, as in they'd leave a fair bit of it up to yourself? Well, especially as you're one of the senior members of the weigh room now anyway. I mean, you're obviously not Niall McCullough, but like, I suppose they'd leave plenty of it up to you, would they?
Yeah, well, Kevin would have his theory on it, and like, he'd tell you X, Y and Z. I think all three would have their own theories on how they'd like it to happen. No much more than I would have a theory on how I want it to go. But as soon as the stall's open, your plan can change. You know, a horse could stumble and you get left a couple of lengths and you're after being told to sit in the first tree. You know, you have to have the confidence in your own initiative to say, right.
Yeah, this fellow's not, that's not going to happen here.
Exactly, and they're knowledgeable enough. And I think that's what I really found this year, is the confidence and the kind of faith that was, put into me, provided, I don't know how to describe it, but I was never put under pressure. And looking back on the Irish Oaks, that's what annoyed me when I was riding for Mr. Welder. I was never actually put under pressure. You never felt like, oh God, if I don't get this right, you know. And I was kind of making that up in my own head, because it's not very often you get to ride in those big races.
I suppose that just takes time to develop the relationship too, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, Friday Night Racing is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie or follow the new Twitter account at HRI Racing. Before we kind of talk a bit more about your career, Chris, and what your plans are for the winter, just we'll go through the weekend's racing here and maybe get a bit of insight from you and from Tom here. The Group 3 Lochbrown Stakes. Now, that takes place at 4:20 at the Curragh tomorrow. The Aidan O'Brien trained Capri set to go off favourites. The other runners, Cypress Creek, Moteo, Eminent Authority and Castaza. The view, Chris, on that?
I actually like Mr. Wells' filly Innes. I finished second her in a decent handicap on Champions Weekend, and I think she's an improving filly. I think she's every chance of running a huge race in it, and I wouldn't be surprised if she was right there at the tick of it right at the end.
Tom?
Yeah, I'm a fan of Castaza as well. She won the Patingo, goes for the Lochbrown here. Totaline did the same. And I don't know what you think, Chris, but I mean, Capri probably as a favourite, he's probably opposable. He probably has his own ideas about the game at this stage in his life.
Yeah, look.
He's a top-class horse, but...
Yeah, he'll probably start off favourite, and rightly so. But look, you have to look at the weight difference, the fact that Castaza is a filly coming in there in red hot form. She's after winning three in a row. She looks like she's a very much improving filly. And I'd say, I wouldn't mind riding her anyway. I'll put it to you that way.
Yeah, it looks like you couldn't put Jock Gandhi off. He's had another brilliant season as well in there in Mr. Wells yard.
Yeah, so the group,
exactly, yeah.
The Group 1 Middle Park Stakes, that goes to post at 3 o'clock at Newmarket tomorrow. Two-year-olds over 6 furlongs. Earthlight's the favourite for Andre Fab. Closely followed in the betting by the Richard Hannon trained Mum's Tipple. Siskin and Monarch of Egypt are the leading Irish challengers. Have we got a chance in a way win there at Newmarket tomorrow, Chris?
Look, I'll be shouting for Colin and Jer anyway.
Siskin.
Big fan of Jer, and Colin's a great fella as well. Look, he has to improve. He's done nothing wrong, but he still has to take another step up. It's the first run outside the country as well. So, look, he looks like he's a great temperament. Like, when the horse got loose at the Curragh the last day, it didn't seem to faze him. So I don't imagine travel will be too much of an issue. But, like, if you were going by official ratings, he's the guts of £6, which, I don't know, about two and a half lengths. So he's a little bit to improve on, but he's open to it.
I think at the prices, you have to look at Siskin. I just
at 92 or something.
Yeah, 4-1, 9-2. Yeah. I think he's an absolutely brilliant price. Earthlight's a deserved favourite, but I mean, Mum's Tipple was very visually impressive the last day. But I mean, you just Siskin, like, is just the kind of horse, as Chris mentioned. He's just such a good temperament.
Two-year-olds. 3:40 then, Chris and Tom, the Cambridgeshire, 33 runners. Le Don de Vie, good birthday, heading the market. Chris, whatever about the difficulty of calling this as a commentator, what are these races like to ride in? Crazy.
Look, I've often went over there thinking I had a chance, and then you get drawn on what you think might be the right side, but it ends up the wrong side, and you finish, win your own side, but you can finish 17th. Like, you know, it's absolutely crazy. Look, the fancy ones in the betting are all drawn high. The form, the whole stable are in, I'd be going for Frankie's horse and John Gosden, Lord North. They seem to do no wrong at the minute, and he seems like he's drawn on the right side.
Tom?
Yeah, my token selection would be a FAK, who's careful saying that, AFAAK, but trained by Charlie Hills, has won a range of going. Jim Crowley on board, up near the top of the weights, is a slight negative, but look, as Chris says, those races are nuts. There was a sales race at the Curragh a few years ago where Gerard Lyons ran a Group 2 horse, and he was drawn the wrong side, and he was just touched off, and he was literally a stone well in. But
yeah, and obviously ground as well can be a big factor in draws. On Sunday, the Group 2 Beresford Stakes, the main event of the Curragh, 6 furlongs, 2-year-olds, 4 o'clock the post time. Chris, you ride Shechem for Emmer Weld, winner at the Stowa last time out. What type of chance does he have? He's got to turn the form over within his three, who beat him at Galway.
Yeah, I think he's every chance of doing that. Possibly, I just tactically didn't probably shine on him in Galway. I thought he was an improving horse, ran a good race behind Mogul in the Curragh, and like, he demolished the field down in Listowel on real testing ground. So if the days of rain comes, it won't be a concern to him. You wouldn't be thinking a 91 can win a Group 2, but I think he's improving, and I think he's every chance of being there thereabouts.
Tom, we have Camorra, Cormorant, Gold Maze in a three, Royal County down in Silvertown, opposing Shechem. We have Aidan O'Brien horses, Cormorant and Royal County down, higher on the Racing Post ratings than in a three. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, I as Chris says, look, Shechem, as Chris says, he'll have such an advantage of fitness. And if the rain does come down, that's just going to be massive in this. I'm sure, Chris, you'd be happy enough if it keeps raining at the Curragh.
Exactly, yeah, I'm hoping it rains.
Aidan O'Brien, the Dominus, he's won that race alone 18 times in the past. So
as many times as I've been to Cheltenham, Tom.
Yeah, I know. But it'd be great for Shechem. But like I say, some brilliant horses have come out of that in the past, even like, you know, Japan last year and St Nicholas Abbey, and See the Stars over the years.
Chris, we'll just talk about the whip rules in a second here, but the Toad Irish Under Jockeys Fund remains at €7,549 after Goran Park was forced to abandon last weekend due to the weather. Peaceful didn't take her chance in yesterday's rescheduled card. This weekend, the jumps return to Navan tomorrow. The Curragh will have plenty of high-class action, as we've spoken about over the 2 days, with the highlight of the Group 2 Beresford Stakes. The final day of the Newmarket-Cambridgeshire meeting will take centre stage in the UK tomorrow, and plenty of Irish interest in Group 1s on the card. So, Tom, we've got a winner in each way selection.
My selection is going to be in the Renaissance Stakes. I know Chris rides Beckford here, but
Gustavus, when is this, tomorrow or sir?
On Saturday at 2 o'clock, Gustavus Weston, who's won over course and distance on the going, really well thought of, think he might still be improving, and Chris rides Beckford, who has a decent chance, but I just think Gustavus Weston.
What kind of price are we talking about here?
Well, I hope Speaking Colours
will be favourite. A working man's price, hopefully.
Yeah, I think Speaking Colours might be favourite. Gordon Lord Byron runs there as well, which would be good to see him at least. He's shown incredible love of the game for the season this year as well, even though he's nearly a teenager at this stage. But yeah, Gustavus Weston, hopefully around 7-2.
Now, Chris, you've been an outspoken critic of the new whip rules. Why?
Well, I suppose the rule itself, in my opinion, and look, this is only my opinion, I think the rule itself is fine. I've no issue with the rule. I just think it probably needs a little bit of tweaking on how it's implemented. I think the penalties are a bit harsh, because basically it's kind of a totting up, whereas you'll get a caution, you'll get a day, you'll get a 2 day, depending on what your offence is. But for example, if I had gone through all of them and I am hitting my fourth offence and it's neck and neck in a group one, and I give one an extra flick down the shoulder with my hand off the rein, and then you have an apprentice that gives horse 12 smacks and it's his first defence, he's liable to just go in and get a caution or a day, whereas I'm going straight up to the turf club for 6 days. Do you know, the punishment, the crime and the punishment have to match, do you know what I mean? And at the minute, it just doesn't feel that way. I think it can be tweaked, and I think everybody will be happy if we all sat down and came up with way of doing it.
There was a suggestion that there was going to be discretion. Do you think there kind of hasn't been enough discretion? Because, I mean, the amount of incidents has rocketed.
Yeah, look, I think, like, the stewards in this country are good enough that you don't need to take the discretion away from them. You don't need to put it down in black and white and say, right, X, Y, and Z. And if they do that, like, there has to be certain circumstances, or, you know, if you give a horse a flick down the shoulder and your hand is off the rein, it's counted as one strike, which to me is, it just doesn't make sense. You know, it's,
The whip doesn't hurt the horses as well, Chris. I think that's
my son is obsessed with jockeys, big fan of Chris as well. He's gotten a few high fives from him at the races, and he has a racing stick. And he goes to Pony Club. He's not allowed to use it because it basically a pony won't even respond to it. It's that soft.
Yeah, the new whips that they brought in a few years ago, they're well padded, they're well made. You know, we're being educated on how to use them properly. I just think, right, Grant, they want to put a number or whatever. And again, this is only my opinion. If they want to put the number on it and we're all doing whatever. But like I said to you, if your hand is off the rein, it's counted as a strike. If you give one a flick down the shoulder, you know, there will be certain circumstances if a horse is looking left or looking right where they won't count that. Those circumstances are kind of very rarely seen, or it's all perception. You know, I think if you just give the discretion back to the stewards on the day and maybe just change the penalties a little bit and have it like, you know, your driving license, get your penalty points as such, and then if you hit 12 penalty points, you're brought to court. They could do something similar with the whip. If you meet X amount of numbers as your penalty, you're sent up to the turf club and they'll figure out a way how to deal with you, be it 6 or 7 days, or they fine you, or, you know, whatever.
Chris, the winter plan, are you going to be like trying to rack up the winners at Dundalk? Are you going to try to go to the Far East? What's the plan going to be?
Yeah, I've normally gone, for the last couple of winters, I've gone away to Dubai, but this year I'm not. I'm going to stay at home, probably take a break in the new year, but Dundalk will be the port of call for a lot of Friday nights, right up to Christmas anyway. I'll probably take January off and recharge the batteries and be fighting fit then, ready to go for the season ahead.
Do you have to kind of watch your weight then at Christmas time, January? Are you somebody that struggles with your weight, or do you find it easy to do a weight? What's your like normal riding weight?
No, I can do bottom weight, so I'll be eating as much as I can for Christmas.
Good man.
Getting the strength up, as much turkey and ham as I can get, but you don't get that out in Dubai, so I'll really make a pig of myself this winter. But no, I'm lucky. My weight is good. It kind of, I went to India for 5 winters in my late teens into early 20s, and it kind of stabilised my weight. You know, when you're riding 12 months of the year, it just kind of levelled it out. So I was monitoring it every day, and the weights over there were very light, so it kind of just got to a level that I was able to control it. And I'd never go over 8.6, 8.7 in any day, so it's at a good point.
It's a pretty enviable position. You mentioned in the interview in the Racing Post, they talked about, you know, the difference between riding classics and being a champion jockey, and you said, you know, you'd love to do it. Do you think you might look to give it a crack?
Oh, look, I to be honest with you, I set out every year giving it a crack, but sometimes it doesn't work out, you know. You really need a strong firepower behind you, and you need, you know, like Jerry's, I don't know, Colin has what, 55 or 56 winners for him alone.
Yeah.
You know, like that's phenomenal. You need those big numbers behind you, and you need to be, you need your main, or primarily your main yard to fire them kind of numbers at you. And unfortunately, Kevin Prendergast doesn't have those numbers. It's just not it's not possible, you know, like, yeah. 35 horses. Fozzy, as I said, this year had a transition year where you had older horses are finished up at the end of last year. We went through with a handful into this year, but most of the yard was two-year-olds. So next year will be a better year for Fozzy, but still the numbers are not the same as what they were in Kevin. So look, at it, it's not, it, it doesn't look possible at the minute. Barra, I get a lot of support from outside.
Yeah.
Just before we go, Chris, briefly, is Enable going to win the Arc?
I'd imagine so, yeah. I can't see why not. She's just phenomenal, really. I can't see why Magical are turning the form around with her. She pitched up either, so she's the Champion Stakes winner. I don't know, it might be a year too soon for Japan, so I'd imagine she probably will do it.
And you're a Limerick man, Chris. You're a fan of the hurlers?
Big fan, yeah.
Good man. It would obviously disappointing year, but you'll hopefully be back next year.
Yeah, we've the new S&C coach now. He's doing a bit of work with the jockeys as well, Mike Tiley. So he'll be getting plenty of stick off myself and Billy Lee on what he should and shouldn't do for the hurlers.
Any other sports of interest? Would you like follow the golf, the soccer, rugby? Will you be watching the Rugby World Cup now?
I'll watch the rugby. Yeah, I play a little bit of golf. I took it up in Dubai for the downtime over there. But I wouldn't follow it as such because it's frustrating. People think it relaxes you, but it doesn't. It drives you mad.
You don't play with Kevin Prendergast. He obviously still plays a fair bit of golf.
Yeah, I've played the odd time with him. Obviously, I haven't had time this year now. I've been absolutely flat to the boards. But the last number of years I have. But you'd want to bring your A game now playing with the boss.
I was going to say, he'd clean you out.
Give him a few mulligans, yeah. Chris. Give him a few mulligans.
He's quite good, and don't let his age deceive you. He can probably outdrive you and keep it a lot straighter than you would as well, you know.
Yeah. Chris, you're an absolute gent for coming on Friday Night Racing. The best luck in the winter. Well done on the St. Ledger win, and keep going. Keep plugging on.
Cheers. Thanks, lads.
Thanks, Chris.
Chris Hayes there, what an articulate man, going places, St. Ledger winner. Tom, you're going to the Arc.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. You know, you're a big sports venues junkie. You love the occasion. Yeah, the occasion. So I've never been to the Arc. It was one that's definitely been on the list for a long time. So opportunity came up this year, and what better, you know, Enable looking to make history. It could be absolutely magical.
Yeah, we'll have a great time at Longchamp, Tom, and we're delighted to have Chris Hayes on the show as well. We're going to look ahead to the Arc de Triomphe on next week's Friday Night Racing and the Group 3 Concord Stakes at Tipperary. So until then, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Slán go fóill.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
And they're on.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.